Hello, and welcome back to the Full Circle Healing Podcast, where we merge modern cutting-edge science with traditional healing wisdom and everything in between to help you come full circle back to your original natural state of health and well-being. I'm your host, Michael, and over the last 15 years, I've helped hundreds of thousands of people find information, practices, tools, resources, and experts they needed to find their way back to optimal health. Our guest in this episode is author and microbiome expert, Anu Sim. Anu is a board-certified functional health coach and the founder of Nine Arms of Wellness. She specializes in helping busy women lose weight and maintain their goal weight by focusing on gut health and the microbiome. Her personalized and unique philosophy has successfully guided hundreds of women in achieving and maintaining their goals, and her soon-to-be published book, which is fantastic, Feed Your Microbiome to Flourish, reveals the importance of gut health for overall well-being and includes over 50 plant-based microbiome-friendly recipes. In this episode, you'll learn about the overlooked importance of microbial diversity in maintaining metabolic health and a healthy weight long-term, why restrictive diets can cause long-term damage to your microbiome and how to recover from them, simple food swaps and tips to enhance microbial diversity, the role of fiber diversity in feeding the microbiome, and practical cooking tips for gut-friendly meals. And you'll learn about the connection between cultural food traditions and optimal microbiome health and why it matters. I know you guys are microbiome nerds, so there's plenty more in this episode that you'll enjoy. And if you dig this conversation and want to go all the way down the microbiome rabbit hole, please visit rebelhealth.co/microbiome and sign up to get all the details on Kiran Krishnan's Build Your Resilient Gut course, now available here at Rebel Health, who is one of Anu's teachers. Let's talk microbiome now with Anu. Hey, Anu, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you, Michael. It's a pleasure to be here.
Yeah, it's going to be fun. Microbiome is one of our favorite topics around here, and it's not often I have a new guest to talk about microbiome that we haven't had on before, so it's really exciting to me. And any friend of Kiran's is a friend of ours, and that's how we met for people listening out there, and we're going to get into some interesting stuff. So we were just talking before we went on air that you weren't always someone writing books about the microbiome or teaching about health and microbiome, that you were actually spent time here in Italy, that you have a master's in Spanish and used to teach languages. So how did that come about? How did you get to doing what you're doing now in the health world?
Great question. And Michael, like most of us practitioners, it's our own health and our pain and the suffering that, you know, leads to this some kind of search for hope, right? And that's who I was. I was going about doing my thing, you know, being a high school teacher and enjoying languages and all that. And I was hit hard. I had an incredible amount of gut issues and just came out of the blue, you know, or that's how I felt at that time. Like, what did I do? Why did this happen? Because I didn't know what the underlying reason was, you know. So it was really hard on me. You know, I was as a mom and, you know, struggling to take care of the kids and really, really going from doctor to doctor, searching for answers, and I wasn't getting any. And this was a time when internet and we didn't have ChatGPT to just say, hey, what's my problem, you know? So that was really hard. And and I still remember the day when I went in to see a new doctor, and he practically laughed at my symptoms, you know, and because he said, well, that's what all of us in residency go through, you know, stomach issues, not a big deal. And I still remember sitting in that parking lot, just completely hopeless and just feeling this, what am I going to do? You know, I mean, and that's when it hit me that the answers were within me and that I had to just go find them. You know, I come from a country where, you know, food is, you know, it's so incredible. My grandfather was a physicist, and he would always insist that how you eat, when you eat, what you eat is very, very important. And I've kind of forgotten that, you know, chasing the American dream, you know, trying to buy into the convenience of, like, let's just get things done rapidly and get on with work sort of thing. And I think that's when the problems really started. And then when I started researching the microbiome, I realized that this was happening to a lot of immigrants. You know, we get so caught up in, you know, in this standard American diet, getting things eat quickly and move on, that we forget that food is so monumental. Food is medicine. We forget those little important things. And our microbiome changes as we leave our home country and move on to a different country as well. So, yeah, and that's so sitting at UCSD in the library, that's when I found the microbiome. You know, I think one of the first books that I read was about Sonnenberg's, you know, The Good Gut, you know, and it just dawned on me that this is what's missing. I have completely changed how I eat, you know, and yeah. I realized that my microbiome was starving, you know, and that's when the interest started, you know, and then over years, and I just started learning and researching more about it. And that's how I met Kieran. And he became sort of my mentor, you know, that light, you know, he was shining it on all the right things, because even within the microbiome research, there are many things that one can focus on. But I chose to focus my interest on feeding the microbiome, you know, because that's where I felt like I went wrong. You know, that's where I had the most problems. And yeah, like Maya Angelou says, you know, when you're healed, go find someone else to heal. And I think that's what happened. When I started healing my body and I realized, wow, this is all about really treating your microbiomes as forever guests and taking care of them, I wanted to share that with everyone.
That's amazing. Thank you for sharing. I'm curious when that was that you were in that parking lot after talking to that doctor. How many years ago was that?
That was, I think, 2010.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Okay. Yeah, I think that's a story a lot of our audience can relate to. It's one I've heard a lot of times. One I've heard from podcast guests and from our community when we host live things and they comment in the chat or they email us and share their stories, is that nobody believed me. Nobody took this seriously. When I used to work one-on-one with clients, by the time I was working with them, they've heard that story about four times, that, oh, this is normal, or, oh, you know, you're in a stressful job, so there's nothing you can do, or it's all in your head. Or downplaying the symptoms, or take this pill and this will help it. And people really feel invalidated, and it's really disempowering. And it's really, you know, people leave hopeless and confused and like, really, there's nothing, like there's nothing you guys can do. Isn't this like the greatest medical system in the world? So I think a lot of people can relate to that. And I think that Kieran has been that guiding light for quite a few people now that are become microbiome enthusiasts. And there's a lot of them in our community as well. And the way he teaches it makes it very approachable and easy to understand and really good at distilling down. I've been behind the scenes and nerded out with him before and been like, whoa, you need to take it down a couple levels. But when he's teaching, he's very good at teaching it appropriately to the audience. And
that's so attractive to me as a teacher, because I feel like Kieran had this very natural ability to make science, just dilute the science for the layperson, you know.
Yeah. For sure. I used to be a teacher too. I didn't tell you before we came on, but yeah, I taught as well, but I taught completely different subjects. But it's one of the most difficult things as a teacher to teach to different levels of knowledge within your audience at the same time. So if it's a diverse group you're teaching to like keep the people that are a little bit more advanced engaged and still not cause the new folks to glaze over is a skill as a teacher for sure. And I don't remember who said it, but there's a famous saying about teaching that in order to teach something in a really, really simple way, you have to have it mastered to a degree that is extreme. That's not the exact quote, but like you can't, I don't want to use the word dumb something down, but you can't distill something down to like its essence and teach it at a really simple level unless your knowledge of it is immense, because otherwise it doesn't work.
And in science especially, this is something that I found out just writing the book that and I always had Kieran's voice in my head. He kept saying, you've got to write for like a fifth grade level, you know, just and that's not dumbing down, because we all
know
at fifth grade in certain areas. And, you know,
I knew more stuff about certain things in fifth grade than I do now, for sure. And there's so many people. I've interviewed a lot of people now at this point, or collaborated with a lot of people, or watched a lot of people, or read a lot of things. And not everyone that knows a really in-depth knowledge of a subject is very adept at teaching it.
Yeah.
And it can be really challenging sometimes to to distill down what they're saying into things that the audience understands. So this book that you're talking about is coming out early 2025. It'll probably be right after we release this. We're recording this at the end of 24, but I think the book's coming out in March, right?
Yeah.
And this will probably go live late January, early February. So we'll probably put a link there for people to get to it and get on a waiting list of some kind for that or get notified when it comes out. And we'll definitely let people know. The book, you decided to focus on feeding the microbiome, right?
Yeah.
And this is a topic we've talked some about around here. And what I think there's all these fad diets that are going around and fad ways of eating, and either super restrictive or you just eat these six foods or you do, you know, these kind of things. And how does feeding the microbiome compare to some of these dietary trends we're seeing in the in the health world?
Yeah, more than ever before, I think we have such divisive way of looking at diet. You know, it's like, I'm vegan, I'm keto, I'm this or that. And within that, there are so many different things. Oh, I have gut issues, I can't eat this, so I can't eat that. And what I did notice with in my practice with most of the clients who came to me, and so Michael, a lot of them come to me. This just happened organically in my business. People started coming to me for metabolic health, you know, largely to bring their A1C down, their blood sugar down, maybe get off medication for cholesterol you know, hypertension, things like that. And along the way, a lot of them started coming to me for weight loss. And what I did notice was they would come for weight loss having been on very restrictive diets or programs like crash diets or juice fast or like Weight Watchers and things like that. They would lose the weight, but the weight would come back. So when they come to me, they'd be just completely disappointed because the weight had come back and then some. And that is when I started really thinking about what is going on here. You know, why are they gaining the weight back? And of course, there's the carbohydrate model and, you know, the brain and, you know, weight loss is not that simple, you know. I mean, they're trying to make it, you know, like another thing where you give them a drug to lose the weight, right? That's where we're at with obesity today. But I started looking at it from the perspective of the microbiome, because this just happened organically in my practice. The more fiber and plant-forward diets that my clients were on, they seemed to hold on to the weight loss. So that was very interesting to me. And I started digging into the research and I found many interesting things. It's coming from the Weizmann Institute, for example. There was one particular one by Aaron Elenov, I think, if I'm saying his name correctly. He talks about the obesity memory, that the microbiome holds on to past obesity memory. And all of the other metabolic factors, you know, like the cholesterol, all of that would be normal, but that obesity memory lingers. And one of the reasons is on a restricted diet, we lose a lot of bacteria, you know, that are like flavonoid digesting bacteria and things like that, that are really adept at extracting energy from food, you know. So that that becomes, we've all heard about, and I'm sure your audience is really well educated about Firmicutes, bacteroidetes, and you know how that.
You're welcome to get into it if you want to. I think that's something people could benefit from hearing more than once. I think that's a
So I started with those connections, and obviously I use BioNFX in my practice, and I saw that ratio was elevated in most of my clients who were coming in for the weight regain. You know, that yo-yo weight gain. That was a big thing. And the flavonoid digesting bacteria, we saw that alpha diversity was very low. And as soon as we started feeding them things that the bacteria loved, you know, like fiber and fermented foods and, you know, diversity within the plant kingdom. You know, one of the first things I remember hearing Kieran say was, it doesn't matter what kind of animal protein you feed your microbiome, but really wants diversity from the plant kingdom. So go to the different markets, find different kinds of products, produce to feed your microbiome. So that kind of stuck. And so I started researching more and more about it. And it was almost like every researcher was saying the same thing. Really, after researching the entire book, the one big mantra that I can share with everyone is fiber is important. And fiber is not just one thing. You know, dietary fiber comes in different forms. And so you've got to have like several different kinds of fiber to feed different microbes. And all fiber are not prebiotic in nature. So there are many things about food and feeding your microbiome that is so important. So I was hoping that I could translate that in simple language to my clients and prospective readers.
That's great. How long have you been working on the book?
3 years now.
Yeah, it's quite over the years, I've kind of had shifting personal interests or focuses on different topics. And each time I'm really into something, I'll be talking to somebody about it and they'll say, you should write a book on this. And I have so many friends who have written books at this point, and I know what goes into it.
Yeah.
So I've never done it because I've never felt like I had the space to do it because it's a giant undertaking. And so kudos to you. And maybe someday, I always reply with maybe someday, but it's going to be a great resource for people. And I think the diversity is really the key, right? Like, we were the first platform that Kieran ever like spoke on, and it was about 10 years ago. And one of the first times we ever had him on a webinar, I remember him, I don't remember the exact numbers, but he talked about how humans used to eat an average of X number of foods a week or a month, or I don't remember what the time range was. And that a lot of undisturbed cultures that still exists today will eat this incredible diversity of like weeds and plants and roots and this and then berries. And like, it just was this huge list. And then he asked the audience, like, how many foods do you think the average American eats in a week? Like different foods. And the number was stunningly low. Like it was, and then people were arguing, no way that's true. I eat this and this and this and this. And then he picked it apart and was like, that's corn. That's also corn. That one is corn. This one is rice. This one is this. And the person who thought they listed like 26 foods, it was really about 8.
Yeah.
Foods. And so can you speak on that a little bit?
And it's very interesting. I was at the Microbiome Labs conference last year, and I took in lots of different fruits and vegetables from different markets. And we just did a fun little experiment to see how many people can recognize these fruits and vegetables. Only two people won the contest. And one of them was a waiter at the hotel.
Yeah. Oh, he knew the food better than the conference attendees.
Thai, and he had, you know, he was used to the Chinese market, and he was his mom.
I started going to different like ethnic food markets after hosting Kieran on webinars because I would be looking for different kinds of like roots and tubers and different kinds of vegetables, and I never knew what to do with them. But then I would come home and I would go on the internet and figure out what to do with them. But I started going because that's where you find all, like, there was whole sections of produce I'd never seen before in some of the Asian markets and the Mexican grocers.
Yeah.
I started eating a lot of plantains of different ages and yucca.
Yeah.
And the big brown.
Yeah.
I just found a shop here that sells that, which is remarkable. Like, that is not easy to find around here. San Diego's much easier.
Yeah, I thought it was an interesting thing. And just you living in Italy, I was outside of Milan and a friend of mine said, hey, there's this wonderful herbalist here. You know, we'd probably go see him. So it was, you know, in Italy, you know, it was like a spiraling staircase. It was like, eventually went up. The guy was like, at least in my younger thing, I thought, oh man, he must be at least 90.
Probably is.
And then he sat there and he tested my pulse and he checked my pulse and he looked at me and he looked at my face and he said, he said in a dialect that I didn't quite understand and he said, tell the girl that she needs to eat a lot of red onions and she'll be fine. And this was well before we knew that red onions have a lot of prebiotic capacity.
Yeah, yeah.
And so that was like, but he said it with such confidence and such faith that would just change my health. And so I came back home that summer and started adding red onions to everything.
Bonus is that it makes most things taste better.
Yeah.
so yeah.
After,
wow, that's cool.
And the diet itself, I call it the flourish diet. And it's really based on diversity. And so while we talk a lot about fruits and vegetables, and if you've been eating a certain kind of broccoli, how would you switch to, let's say, a Chinese broccoli? If you're eating the starchy potato, you know, how would you actually cook that potato so it does give you more resistant starch? So boiled and cooled rice. And it's not a question about don't eat this or that, because we've been on enough restrictive diets to last a time. I think it's more about how do we make this food adapt to us, and how do we transform and heal from these foods. And so that became more important to me than just saying don't eat this or don't eat that, because I have a lot of clients who come to me through SIBO and IBS. And by the end of our journey together, I have them eating all these foods. It's just a matter of growing the right kind of bacteria and to help with the process of digestion.
Yeah, I think a lot of people hear this and they're like, well, I can't eat all. And so it's restoring the oral tolerance to being able to eat and then gradually increasing the diversity. But these restrictive diets, one of the things that Kieran taught in the course that we recently did with him is like the damage that these super restrictive diets do long term, and that they're fine for like symptom management while you're trying to work your way out of or through something. But I've had people come onto our stuff, onto our webinars and things that are like, I've eaten 6 foods for 5 years.
Yeah.
And that's going to create a very dysfunctional microbiome situation, because you're feeding certain bugs and you're feeding them the whole time and you're not feeding any of the other ones. And so the diversity is...
Yeah,
and that, I like that. And you offer real switches and how-tos, because just telling people like eat more different foods, it can get overwhelming or frustrating. So offering like real switch this with this or try this instead of this. And here they have a ton of different kinds of beans and grains and lentils that I didn't see in the States. So I'm experimenting for that. Like instead of trying this, I like this lentil. Well, they have 7 colors of this.
Yeah.
So
so I actually have a very, like a format, I'd call it, like to enhance or increase diversity. Because learning or trying to figure out a bunch of recipes in our, again, one of the American ways is convenience, right? Mm-hmm. So my mantra became convenience leads to consistency. But that convenience should come from really, you know, how do we adapt to this world where everything is so fast, but we still need to take care of our microbiome. So I have a simple, format where you create a salad, and that salad base could be, you change it up, you know, like you get your greens from the Indian store or the Middle Eastern, because everybody has their own special greens, and every kind of green has something important to offer us, our microbiome. And the beans, like for example, like in Italy, you'd have cannelloni beans or garbanzo. They have Chicha Nigra, you know, which is a black garbanzo, which is fabulous. You know, I mean, you could just cook them and put them into your salad. And it's not about having tons of it. It's just having enough that the microbiome recognizes that as a diverse source of fiber. That's the whole idea. And that also helps with the oral tolerance. So for people who are really sick and they can't really, I mean, that was me. I had to start with maybe just like baby food, you know, like making a smoothie with all of these things. Had to go very, very slow and really bring my microbiome back in shape, where now I can eat just any kind of starch or any kind of fiber and my body can handle it. But it takes time, and it, you know, so you have to go step by step. But as long as we remember that, you know, it's not about another restrictive diet, but slowly increasing these incredible enhancers of microbial diversity. And that's your fiber, that's your probiotics, really understanding the difference between probiotics, prebiotics, prebiotic fibers, fermented foods, what kind of fermented foods really have live probiotics in them. Those are all important things, because that's still a little shaky, you know, because most people think that all fermented foods have live probiotics, but that may not be the case. You know, how do we make it?
And there's a lot of clever marketing.
Exactly.
As well.
A lot of marketing ploys. And another big thing, I'm sure, Michael, that people think, so, okay, I'm just taking a probiotic for it, so I should be fine. So that's one of the biggest myths that I like to clear, and saying everything starts with food. Let's have a food base, and then taking a probiotic for extra support.
Yeah, supplements are supplemental. Like, they can be really helpful, and it's not supposed to be the base. So yeah. The rest of Italy, kind of disparagingly at times, refers to Tuscans as bean eaters. Yeah. So I live in the place where there's the most beans. And at the little organic grocer on my street, the other day I went over there and they had 11 different kinds of beans.
Wow.
And so
yeah.
I'm working my way through them. And adding them in salads is a good idea. What?
Do you have an Instapot to cook your beans?
I do, but I've never really mastered them in there. I always screw them up when I use the Instant Pot with the beans. So I just soak them and then simmer them on the stovetop until they're done. It takes a lot longer, but for some reason, I always botch it in the Instant Pot. I know that a lot of people use it, but I'm not very good with gadgets.
Yeah. Well, for people in your community who have digestive distress from beans, I would say using something like that, really soaking the beans, you know, to get rid of the lactic acid, the lectins.
Yeah. That's a good tip. I should have said, I should have prefaced that. I soak them overnight.
Yeah.
Okay. But that really helps people with the GI issues, right?
So the, some of the spices that I do add into it, and spices, herbs, are like cloves. Very high in antioxidants and polyphenols. I add bay leaves and epazote, which is a Central American herb. You know, I think anyone and who's used to Mexican food will know that epazote is like the basis. You know, I on accident discovered it. I was in
I've never heard of it.
Yeah, epazote is like a green herb that grows.
E-P-I-S-O?
E-P-A-Z-O-T-E, epazote. Saying the Spanish be episode. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I told you before we went on air, my living in Italy has ruined my spelling in other languages.
Yeah.
Okay.
But that one thing, you can actually grow it. Like in California, I can grow it year long.
I would have to.
Yeah. But you can get it at the Mexican store as a little, you know, it's herb. And you could add it to your beans. It really disrupts the flatulence, decreases that, and the bloating, all of that. I really think of it as a miracle herb for a lot of people. You know,
there are not Mexican markets here, but I could probably buy seeds of it and
you could grow it
and grow it. We grow cilantro for that same reason. We can't get cilantro here, and we like to make Mexican food.
Mm-hmm. Another thing in Italy that maybe you could get Cuban oregano. That's another wonderful oregano that has medicinal properties.
Maybe. I would be surprised, but we can try. That's the only negative. People say, "Oh, you live in Italy, the food's amazing." I'm like, "Yeah, the food is amazing." And I lived in Chicago and California for my whole life until about 3 years ago, and there's every kind of food there.
Yeah.
And here there's not.
Yeah.
And so the Italians have no interest in it, and the tourists don't want to go eat Mexican food in Italy. Well, there's no demand for it. So it's very difficult to find diverse types, like cuisines of food or ingredients for cuisines of food. That's the only complaint I have about the food situation here. I was very spoiled in California and in Chicago because they're such diverse places. They have everybody's food and grocers, they have everything. So I'm making my way through the variety they do have here, but finding stuff like that is really difficult.
Like just the other day at dinner, I had moringa. I actually got moringa pods growing in my garden. And moringa is like a superfood. And
yeah, that's the one that's in all kinds of supplements I've seen.
Right. But also from the microbial perspective, it's fabulous for the microbiome. So it's the marrow that is in the moringa pod is fantastic, you know, for health. I will just take the moringa, the marrow of the moringa along with the seed and then just cook it and add it into, you guys don't have to see it, the gluten-free tortillas, right? But no. We have a brand called Siete, and the reason
we used to eat them when we lived in the States.
It's just easy. Again, it's about convenience. All you do is you toast it and add the moringa into it, epazote, you know, a little bit of broccoli and things like that. Makes a great roll. You can put it in your air fryer or just toast it on a cast iron pan, and it's a perfect little treat.
So is there going to be an accompanying recipe book to go with your book?
I will actually put it in my bonus for you.
Okay. Amazing. That's interesting. No, I get sad thinking about all the tacos. I haven't eaten tacos since June, and it's December. And I used to eat tacos like twice a week when we lived in California. So that's good to know, though. And the Jovial brand of gluten-free Italian like pasta and things actually comes from originally the town that I live in here.
Oh, wow.
She was an American who founded the company. She passed away a year or two ago. Was really young. I don't know the story at all, but I had a lot of mutual friends with her. And she lived here in Lucca and founded the company here. And the company's still based here, but they don't sell those products in Italy.
Yeah,
they're only exported.
I love the fact that everything is in glass bottles, glass jars, Jovial, and all those little carpet. They're really good.
It's a high quality brand for sure. And it's just funny because I was talking to somebody here and I asked them if they know it, and they said, "No, what?" And I described it, and they're like, "No, we've never heard of it." And I said, "It comes from here, and they sell it a lot in the U.S." And they said, "Well, they don't sell it here."
Yeah.
So it was really, really interesting. But they do have the gluten-free options here are much better than I anticipated. Like, it's actually better than in the States. Like, they take it more seriously, and it's more...
You know, they have... those things have changed so much. And pasta is a big part of your dietary, you know, thing. And hence, really hard without...
I thought that was a stereotype before I moved here, but it is not. They eat a lot of pasta.
Yeah.
And there's a fun... If you have celiac disease here and it's tested and proven celiac disease, you receive a stipend on your medical card every month to purchase gluten-free pasta and bread for free, because they don't think anyone should have to go without that. Yeah. And it's more expensive than the conventional pasta and bread. So it's like part of their health plan, because they feel like it would be bad for your health to not be able to eat pasta. So somebody told me that, and I thought it was a joke, and it is not a joke. You can use it's like part of your medical plan.
I heard about Italians and researchers that because they eat such big salads with rocket arugula and things like that, you know, that they don't have that, you know, they feed their microbiome, whether they know it or not, they are feeding their microbiome with all of those lentils and green salads and things like that. I don't think the whole time I was in Italy, I don't think there was a day when I didn't get fresh salad. And it was
were in Rome, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. It's not, there's a lot less of that around here.
Okay.
But there's a lot of lentils and a lot of beans and a lot of things like that that would feed it for sure. There's vegetables, but not as many salads. We get it. We can get the lettuce, but like in restaurants and things, like you don't, on the menu, we've learned not to order salads here. It's just iceberg lettuce with like sliced carrots.
Maybe I'm just lucky, you know, just seeing
I think you were lucky. Rome is a much different.
Yeah.
Italy's like 20 different countries. So the food is way different.
Yeah.
If I drove 2 hours from here, the food would be completely different than it is here. And which is fun as a food person. But so the book's going to come out in March. We've talked a lot about really helpful tips and suggestions and information that's probably going to be found in there. Is there anything else in the book? You're talking about how to feed the microbiome. You're going through different types of fiber, different, probably talk about plant nutrients and polyphenols, things like eating colors, right, too?
So the whole book, the first section is all about the microbiome. So it's almost like a primer, like just information. I connected to NCDs and, you know, how the microbiome changes, you know, with age and things like that. And then section two is about all the components in the diet, which is like a good glimpse of all these vegetables. I've never heard of this vegetable, so I'll have something about it, you know, like
good.
Heard of like ash gourd, you know, what the heck is ash gourd?
No idea.
So the book will tell you what an ash gourd is, you know, and where to buy it. That's more important, right? You know, how we find it. And then the last part of the book is our recipes. And then anyone who buys the book will get like about 8 different bonuses. And all the bonuses are something like action steps you can take to feed your microbiome right away. And then I'm also starting a membership, you know, along with that, just to, and so we have a lot of videos and, so, Michael, I'm actually producing that video for you now, and it's all about spices. So,
yeah, we're excited. Yeah. It's gonna, for those listening, it's gonna be included in the Build Your Resilient Gut course with Kieran as a bonus, and we're looking forward to having that in there. And I'm gonna grab the book and get those bonuses, and I'm putting together some stuff for the course around feeding the microbiome. So I'm really curious to learn more and, of course, reference your book. And we'll probably figure out a way to package the book into something with the purchase of the course. And he's got ideas. That guy's full of ideas. So he comes up with the ideas and we implement the ideas. So I love his idea machine, but sometimes it's too many ideas. And then I'm like, wait, you got to hold on. I'm still doing the last one. But he wants to have the book involved. So we'll talk about it. But yeah, and what's the title?
Feed Your Microbiome to Flourish. And the diet itself, I call it the Flourish Diet. And like you, my company is called Nine Arms of Wellness. So one of the arms is breath work. So just like you, Michael, I 100% believe in breath and yoga nidra. And those are all the different arms that I help my clients with the healing, you know, because it can't be just one thing. It has to be all of it to have like complete transformation.
I am a fan of yoga nidra. Yeah. So I need more of it. I haven't done it in a while, but I should, because I never think of it, because usually I don't have a lot of time with the little one, but I always have like 15, 20 minutes before I go to bed. And even short little sessions can be really, really helpful.
The only need is like 10 minutes of yoga nidra.
Help sleep a lot.
You know, it's amazing. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Well, great. And where should people go to get in line for the book, check out your work? Where is the best place for them to go?
Well, I'm on my website is ninearmsofwellness.com. And so there's a link for the book. And I think the pre-order starts end of this month, ready for Christmas. And my Instagram handle is @ninearmsofwellness. I'm not a very social media kind of person.
I'm not either. So we actually just hired a social media team that's going to be doing our social media. And they were asking me all these questions about what accounts I really enjoy, or how much time do I spend on Instagram, or what do I want? And I was like, I don't.
Yeah.
I said, you're not going to work with another client in your life who's less interested or doesn't know anything about it, but make ours cool. Go ahead. Ready? Go.
Permission. You do your stuff.
Yeah, you can. I trust your judgment. Don't ask me what I think is a good idea. This is your expertise. So I totally get it. But Nine Arms Wellness.
And then get on my email list, and I have microbiome tips, recipes. Great.
We'll link everything right below in the show notes for everybody that's listening. So don't worry about scrambling to find a pen. We'll have the links for you right below. And check out the book for sure. And I'm sure we can have you back early next year. We can feature the book and talk about it some more. And maybe get you on a webinar with Kieran at the same time. Wow. We could do a Feed Your Microbiome webinar. And it would be like the big time.
Yeah.
Teaching with the teacher.
I've always told Sharon, you need to come to San Diego so we could cook in the kitchen and show people how to do this.
I don't think you'll have to twist his arm too hard, because when I lived in San Diego, he popped up there quite often and we would go out to dinner, and it was not tough to get him to come to San Diego. So it's not a hard place to convince anybody to go, really.
Yeah.
So, well, thank you so much. It was great meeting you and chatting with you. Congratulations on finally getting to the finish line with this. I know what a project a book is. It's a massive, massive undertaking, but this one's going to be a gift to lots of people and really help a lot of people, and really taking, you know, something that can be really, really complex and making it, here's the simple ways to do this. And not only just the information, but the how-to and the making it practical, because something you said, like, without practically being able to do it, it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
Thank you so much.
Yeah. Thank you. Goodbye.